It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
All right, happy to have you with us here on this Thursday. Mike has the day off today. I am the Bulldog along with Zach Jones. Very happy to welcome back to the program on the Wester Hotline one of our favorites, Connor Rogers. How many different jobs do you have now, Connor, by the way? I'm sorry, I didn't pull up your bio. I should know it by heart, but you got like 9 gigs on there, and it just takes the whole interview for me to list them all. So you're a busy dude.
You don't have to do that. All you have to know is this time of year, I'd say June and July, I do the Mets pod once a week, a little bit of summer scouting to get ahead of the draft, and then it's a lot of chilling, which is good news for all of us, I think.
Tough one here. Zach just mentioned in the update that Skeens had a no-hitter going. He's out. Top of the eighth, there's some dude named Hudson pitching. He was at 99 pitches. No hits through 7, but we'll see. They may get a team no-hitter out of it, but Skeens is done. So too bad there.
Yeah, you got maybe what the greatest pitching prospect we've seen over the last decade. They're not going to let him throw his arm off for the sake of a chance of a no hitter. It's disappointing that he doesn't get the shot to do it, but that is the baseball world we're in these days.
Yeah. So how are things in this dead period with the Jets here? I saw a clip of Aaron Rodgers golfing today, and someone asked him about Davante Adams, and he said something to the effect of, "I love Davante. I can't wait to play with him again." Did I miss something?
That's how I felt. I feel like every time I see a clip of Aaron Rodgers, it's him on a golf course and just people asking him questions. Like literally, like every time of this time of year, every year, it's him golfing and just people chasing him. And he's answering all the questions. And we know what happens when he answers all the questions. You truly never know what you're going to get. And I don't know if he let the cat out of the bag that the Jets at some point are going to try. I know they tried last year and the Raiders didn't pick up the phone, but if they'll try again. All I can tell you is this. The Raiders, I know internally, they think they're going to win this year, whether people agree or not with that, and it's a tough hill to climb in that division. So that's why Davante Adams, there's been no shot of him being traded last year or this offseason. But it wouldn't shock me if they have a bad start if the deadline looks a little different.
Yeah, right. I mean, I guess that could happen. So how I know it's already a few weeks, a few weeks ago now, but we haven't talked since minicamp and the unexcused absence that I don't know what was going on there. How big a deal? It obviously got a lot of play, but how impactful, if at all, like within the team, was Rodgers not being at minicamp?
Not very much at all, because I guess their view on it was they don't look at minicamp the way that the CBA structures it. And what I mean by that is minicamp is, you could fine players for not being there, while typical OTAs, are optional for a reason. And I think the players and the team, the way they structure those practices, to be honest with you, they don't do things that differently in minicamp. It's really just another spring, early summer structure of padless practices, and the Jets had been practicing for weeks, where I think before that week, Rodgers had been at all 8 practices, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And, as much as they're not in pads, they are full, long practices. They're long days at the facility. So I think for the teammates who, guys at times can come and go during the offseason, when Rodgers missed, it was 2 practices that week. I know it made it seem like minicamp week, right, but they only practiced twice that week. The team was kind of looking around like, "What?" Sometimes people miss these things. And I guess they knew about it for months, and I understand why it blew up into a big story. I think Salah's press conference was not the best distribution of the news.
That's a great way to put it, the best distribution of the news.
And I've said that a lot about Salah over the last couple of months. I don't really know what's going on there. But the players themselves, I guess they just don't look at it the same way when they're there every day.
Yeah, I also thought, like you said, 2 practices, big whoop. But the fact that the organization, or Salah specifically, decided to make the point he made about it, that it was unexcused, just seemed like it reminded me of McDermott last spring with Diggs, when he just sort of kept digging on Diggs that first day, and then they had to have another news conference the next day to sort of correct it all. It was so weird.
Right.
Like, why not just tell you, he's not here and we're fine? and just keep moving. Instead of you go with unexcused, and then now suddenly, you're like, oh no, what's going on over there?
Terrible word choice from Robert Saleh. And I know he's thinking, well, if I just kind of try to blow by it, the reporters are just going to keep asking me about it because it's Rodgers. And but that doesn't mean you come out of the gate just firing. And my takeaway on this was, while it was poor word choice, and yes, you know, he didn't want to open the floodgates where if they let Rodgers go on this trip and didn't find him, and per the CBA, like you're supposed to find the guys, they felt like it treats him differently than the team. And I think it's a reality, right, where we all know Aaron Rodgers is treated differently than everybody else on the roster. Like, I've said it like this to people, Bulldog. The most powerful people in order in the Jets organization are Woody Johnson, number one. Number two is Aaron Rodgers. Number three is Joe Douglas. Robert Saleh is the head coach of the football team. He is not in the top three most important, powerful people in the organization. And I think he knows that. And I think that, you know, it was bad timing, bad choice. Like, it's not how I would advise to go about it. That press conference, to me, was him trying to kind of wield back some of the, hey, I am still the head coach of this football team, and everybody on this 53-man roster is going to be treated, you know, with the same intentions. And I think because it's Aaron Rodgers, they got blown up, understandably, and it was probably not the time to kind of puff your chest and do that. But in my opinion, I think that's what Saleh was doing.
Given that hierarchy, the way you laid that out here, where his power lies or really doesn't lie, I don't, like, how I'm thinking about Nate Hackett here too. Like, how tenuous is any of this in your view here? Because I guess if Rodgers A stays healthy, B performs reasonably well, then maybe there's no trouble at all. But I don't know. I feel like, because of the way Saleh has been somewhat, I don't know, it's marginalized, too strong. I just feel like it wouldn't take a lot for that to kind of spin out on them, I guess. Do you know what I'm saying?
I agree. I think the Hackett side of things, unfortunately, they knew. And I think they explored avenues to kind of keep everyone happy where Hackett wasn't going to be fired, but they were going to bring someone else in as a senior advisor in case, you know what, kind of hit the fan again. Because the reality is, with coaching in the NFL, how I look at it, like, coaches in the NFL are not necessarily there to, you know, get the best out of Aaron Rodgers and even at this point, C.J. Mosley and Quinnen Williams, and honestly, even at this point, Sauce Gardner. Like, those guys are incredible, and they're going to be excellent pretty much no matter where they are. The coaching, the most important aspect of it is when you get hit with injuries, which everyone does, and everyone gets hit with them earlier and earlier each year. And that's the problem, is that when you're hit with those injuries, the coaching needs to have the depth ready to perform. And the Jets were hit with injuries last year, and I know the Aaron Rodgers one might seem like an outlier, but the offensive depth was not ready to perform. And that's on Nathaniel Hackett. And I think the problem is the Jets are in a situation, again, where, yes, the top of the roster is really, really talented, and the defense is the polar opposite. When they get hit with injuries on defense, they could trot out whoever out there. And Jeff Ulbrich, and to his credit, Robert Saleh, just seemed to have practice squad players ready to perform. And with the offense, it's the exact opposite. And I think this is the first year where it feels like it's on Saleh. Like, for years, it was first Mike LaFleur. Then last year, it was on Nathaniel Hackett. Robert Saleh, the head coach of the team, chose to stick by, and I know Rodgers has influence on this, but still, not just Nathaniel Hackett, but Todd Downing, their pass game coordinator, who got fired by Tennessee, and Keith Carter, their offensive line coach, who got fired by Tennessee and had an awful year last year. He chose to stick by them. So if the Jets' offense underperforms this year, no matter who's healthy and who's not, it's not going to be looked at from Hackett and that staff. It's going to be looked at as Saleh because he's enabling this. And that's where it starts to become a Jenga tower to me. I don't know if we'll get there this year. I think this is a really good roster. But if we do get there, that's the problem Saleh's facing, in my opinion.
Connor Rogers on the Wester Hotline, NBC Sports, NFL Draft, Fantasy Football, Happy Hour, Jets pre-post game, the Mets pod, which he mentioned, and the co-host of the NFL Stock Exchange with our buddies at Pro Football Focus. So, recognizing that Rodgers wasn't there for mandatory minicamp, but was there for all of these OTAs, what do your eyes tell you about how he looked? Assuming, I don't know what the rules are, I assume they're the same as they are here, where you get like one practice a week or whatever to check them out. Like, how's he look? Because I saw one clip of him rolling out that looked like me trying to cross the street, and then I realized the bus is coming faster than I thought. Like, oh, I gotta go, you know. And I'm 59 years old, but he didn't look really that comfortable running around there in the clips that I saw. How has he looked as far as you can tell?
Well, that's what I'm really wondering, is what it's going to look like when, you know, the bullets are flying, is what I like to say. When there's a pass rush and it's, you know, real under the lights. Like, nobody really knows until we get to that point of it. Now, you know, I try to ask people that are there every day, around the team every day. Obviously, like you said, Bulldog media is really restricted throughout these portions. So you try to ask people that are actually within the organization. And, I mean, people have told me that the arm looks every bit as it always has. And that's not really surprising, because the leg that he drives off of wasn't the one that he tore the Achilles. So the arm strength and the ability to drive the football from his base is the same. And it's looked exactly the same. The guy's catching the ball from him feels like it's the same. But I agree with your point. Like, we don't know what the lower half is going to look like when it's time to run. And I'm not saying run like Lamar Jackson. I'm saying run like, hey, we need you to roll out and get away from backside pressure. That's where it's going to be really interesting to me. And I think anyone's lying if they told you they got clarity and comfort from OTAs on that. Like, I honestly don't think we'll even know that until the Jets have joint practices with the three teams that they play against this preseason. And it's going to be really fascinating, because it's not just coming back from the injury, but, you know, how many 40-plus-year-olds move like that at the NFL? And the Jets, I think the Jets' moves on the offensive line, not all the money they spent, but also drafting Olu Fashanu as a swing tackle, you know, a long-term answer, but a swing tackle, 11th overall, tells you they know how vital it is to give Rodgers any amount of time this year.
I feel like that pick, Fashanu, might be like the most important pick they made. Because of the age, right? The left and right tackle, especially the left tackle, right? The guy from Dallas, Smith, has had, he's been a great player, but he has had a really tough time staying on the field.
He hasn't played a full season since 2015. And it's amazing that he's still so good, but he's almost, like, we were joking on the podcast that, or not even joking, I'm being honest, like, what is the line you set it for games he misses? And we set it at 4.5. And, like, that's a high number for a player on the offensive line for you to come out of the game and say they'll miss 4.5. Like, it feels like it's right around there, that he doesn't practice a lot, and he's always, you know, when he's ready to play, he's always very, very good still at this age. But Olu Fashanu is going to start, in my opinion, 3 to 3-plus games this year. And that's, man, that mattered a lot, because when the Jets, you know, when they didn't have a tackle last year because of injuries, we saw what happened.
Connor Rogers from NBC Sports here on the Western Hotline with me. Mike's got the day off today. I'm the Bulldog. So the overall here is what? Like, the roster is jacked. The defense should still be good. There's waves of defensive linemen. You've got a top pair of corners. Like, it's all there. So I don't know. What are the range of outcomes here? Like, is it AFC East division title time, wild card contention? Like, what should be the goal here for this team?
They got to make the playoffs. I think the goal should be to host the playoff game. I mean, you're talking about trying to win this division for the first time in way too long, but I think they got to make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, it's just, I don't see this going well for honestly anybody that's over the age of 25 on this roster. Honestly, like, that's where I stand on it. I mean, how many times can you try this and the playoff drought they've had extending past a decade at this point. I mean, you guys know this all too well. It feels like the Jets and the Sabres just sit on the same graphic we're all sick of for how long, and we're all just disgusted every time we see it. And, like, after football season, it's like the Jets, and then after hockey season, everyone's like, oh, the Sabres, and we're all just tired of it, all right? So, and I say that as a Rangers fan. Even I'm tired of it for Sabres fans. Like, when you look at this, they have to win, in my opinion, 10 games. And now, could they win 11 or 12? Sure, they could. I don't know if they'll stay healthy enough, honestly, to do that. Like, I think we're going to see Tyrod Taylor, I think, for a little stretch at some point this season. It's just betting on a 40-year-old quarterback to play 17 games with the wacky primetime schedule they have, some short rest, some weird travel. Like, guys are going to get banged up a lot. But this team needs to win 10 games. I think their total has sat around 8.5, 9.5. So they simply need to go over it, or else there's going to be big time changes here.
How do you feel about the rest of the division here? Miami lost some guys, but they still got you know, a lot of speed. They got to, I'm assuming they'll figure something out with Tua. I mean, he's under contract, but still the extension is sort of lurking out there. We, you know, New England seems to be kind of starting over. So, I don't know. And how do you feel about the Bills at this point, Connor?
Yeah, it's weird, right? I mean, the Bills, justifiably so, are still the favorite in the division, and they deserve that. You have Josh Allen. You have continuity with the coaching staff. This defense still has talent. I understand. I think people are just evaluating their opinions of the Bills based off of the Diggs trade, and I don't know. It's like if you watch the Bills the second half of last year, you wouldn't just evaluate the Bills offseason based on the Diggs trade. Like, they weren't a Stephon Diggs, you know, that wasn't the engine of the offense last year. So I don't see this drop-off for the Bills like some are predicting, and neither does Vegas, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's Miami and the Jets are side-by-side as the runner-ups. And this is the one that is really hard to predict because of the injury variance. Like, I safely put New England at 4. I know there's, you know, some people that are like, oh, they're more talented than people realize. It's still a staff, a first-time staff. It's going to be a little weird under center when they go from Brissett to May at some point. They're rebuilding. They're telling you they're rebuilding. They're going to need some time. The reason the Jets and Miami are tough to distinguish as the runner-up is because of they're so injury-based, both teams. And you look at Tua, who was healthy last year but has been hurt in the past. You know, you look at Tyreek Hill is still phenomenal but getting older and asking about his contract every time he speaks. And then you look at the Jets with Rodgers. There's a lot of variance there. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think this division is going to finish with the Bills and the Jets at the top in that order. Miami, they lost a lot of big pieces, and I was impressed with the value on the almost scrap heap they got on the free agent market. Like, mm-hmm. they made some depth signings for low money that were really, really impressive. But you could evaluate that in a vacuum. They still lost Christian Wilkins. They still lost big pieces. Like, they still need to figure out a new defense and a lot of change. And they'll still be a thorn in everyone's side, but at the same time, I feel like they couldn't win a single big game last year. So I look at this division. I think it's going to be highly competitive across those top three teams. I could see a world where those top three teams are finding a lot of splits with each other, which they have before. That's not shocking. And then New England's on the outside looking in. But if I had to predict today, I would go Bills and then Jets, both teams making the playoffs.
When Waddle got his contract extension in Miami, one of the first thoughts I had was, well, that's the end of Hill. Eventually, like not right mm-hmm. away, but like after this year, I think there's an out on that contract that makes sense. He's over 30. And now he's making noise about a new contract. And I mean, I don't know. Would you bet on that? I'm betting he's not on the team in 2025.
I would not do that at all if I was Miami. Mike McDaniel is kind of a curious figure in terms of where he might just be saying, I will allocate all of my cap space possible to two of the fastest receivers in football, and I'll figure out the rest. And, you know, maybe he's the guy that could do it, but all you have to do is look up the wide receiver market. I mean, after you get through Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown, and Amon Ross St. Brown, it's Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So then if you factor in a Tyreek Hill raise, I mean, you're telling me they're going to – yeah, I agree with you. Like, this is a team that's in a horrible cap situation. Hill is – his game is speed, and he's – you know, going to be on the wrong side of 30. I don't know. It is a really, really tricky one where if he shows up and just plays out this contract this year, I think Miami would be thrilled with that. I can't see them adding years onto his deal. And then once again, are you going to pay a receiver going into his 30s, you know, upwards of what, $36, $37 million right. a year? And you got to figure out Tua.
Right.
Where, like, and that was the hint to me, Bulldog, is that all these leaks that are like the Dolphins aren't offering Tua a market deal. I think they tried to see if they could save on the quarterback and then allocate the leftovers to the wide receivers. And then Tua's camp clearly, or somebody leaked out, like they're not offering a market deal, but he won't take that. Tua wants $50 million, I would think, right? That's a market deal means
right.
to all these guys get. I wouldn't do that either, but at some point Miami has to make a choice. You can't have two wide receivers and a quarterback allocating, what would that be, $120 million?
It's insane. Right. Exactly.
Three players.
Yeah.
Three players.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And, yeah. The receivers are great. Tua, I don't know. Like, they're in an interesting spot there because he's not at the level that the best guys are at, but his stats are, right? But, like, athletically, like, is he making the throws that Mahomes or Allen can make? No. And so it's a tough spot to be. Real quick before we wrap up, you mentioned the Diggs trade and that's a kind of a point of entry for a lot of the analysis of the Bills. Before you came on, I've spent the first hour today talking about Brandon Ayuk and whether fans still want to do that if the Niners do divest themselves of Ayuk, because the Bills, there's been a lot of talk here this week, Connor. The world we're living in is, oh no, by committee's better than having a number one guy because they don't know who to key on and all this sort of stuff. And I'm a little worried that just having a bunch of guys means that they can be covered by a bunch of guys, and I'm worried about that, right? Like that there's nothing extraordinary about anybody. How do you feel about that? We know the Chiefs made it work last year, but their offense did take a big dip last year from what they had been at previously. I don't know. How do you feel about the by committee approach versus having a kingpin alpha dog number one guy?
I'm with you all the way. I like the offense generating, a lot of its production through one guy and the ability to, if the defense wants to kind of allocate all these resources to stopping him, then the other guys can step up, which is the committee, right? And so the IU conversation to me, I saw your tweet about this. It was a simple yes for me. I would do it. I understand the cap situation for the Bills is in a little bit of a shaky spot, but Bean can figure it out, especially if you tied the extension after this year.
Right.
And I know it's a long shot. The Niners don't want to trade IU. The Niners have just dragged their feet because their dream in all of this, in my opinion, is to get through the season as is, and then move on from Deebo Samuel, clear his guaranteed money off the books, and then their wide receiver group will be Ayuk and Ricky Pearsall, who they just took in the first round. They just feel like it's a year too early to do that. You can't get rid of Deebo. Nobody wanted to trade for him, and then you have Ayuk who wants the extension. So they're trying to drag their feet and just get through this with him. Now, I agree, for the Bills, here's the question. I go, do you have Josh Allen? And you go, yes, he's 28. Okay, the answer is yes. That's how it is for me.
Right.
You're in a position where you could win the Super Bowl every single year. Ayuk, I think the reason is when people see $30 million attached to Ayuk's name, they think of Ayuk from 2 or 3 years ago. And last year, Ayuk, in my opinion, was one of the best wide receivers in football, and he just turned 26 this offseason. So, in my opinion, Ayuk's a no-brainer, top 8 to 10 receiver in football. He'd only be better, I think, with a Josh Allen. I know Kyle Shanahan puts him in good spots, but still, they don't throw him the ball a ton, considering his production. Yeah, he's worth every bit of that, and I think that's why the Niners have been so reluctant to trade him.
Yep. I'm realizing now, as we're wrapping up, that the last time we talked to you was right before you were getting married, and then the Rangers were in the playoffs, and there was all of that. Everything, I think, all worked out timing-wise for you with that, and I don't know, I trust you had a fantastic honeymoon and marital bliss, right?
Everything was great. I'll tell you what, it was getting scary. At my rehearsal dinner, they were losing in the third period, and then Chris Kreider scored a hat trick in about 12 minutes of hockey, which saved me. Because if they lost the game, I would have had my wedding the next day.
Right.
And then the night before I was leaving for my honeymoon would have been Game 7 against the Canes, which I was losing all kinds of faith. And I would have been a disaster at my wedding, thinking about how the Rangers just blew their season. And even though they lost to Florida, I can't stomach losing to Carolina. It's just totally different to me. So everything was just phenomenal, top to bottom.
Good deal, man. All right. Well, we love the time and enjoy the visits, as always. And I'm sure we'll hit you up here as we get closer to the season kicking off, Connor. Thank you very much for the time, dude.
Thanks for having me, Bulldog. Always great to talk to you. We'll talk soon.
Connor Rogers, NBC Sports, Pro Football Focus, does some baseball at SNY with the Mets. Jack of all trades, one of our favorites. All right, we'll hit a timeout here and pick up right where we left off with Connor. Brandon Ayuk or by committee? And a lot of good calls in the first hour of the show. We'll try to fire that back up here. 803-0550 is the phone number if you've got an opinion on whether you'd like the Bills to still, at this late juncture, try to find their way to a number one kingpin wide receiver, or just sort of roll with, a group. One way to put it is that only one of them has ever caught a pass from Josh Allen. 803-0550 is the number. Lines are wide open, so lots of room for you to get in here. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.
My first reaction to this, seeing it was on TikTok, was like, wow, who filmed this and posted it? But it was literally Brandon Ayuk who filmed it himself. I don't know if he was actually doing the filming, but he certainly did the posting, clearly sending a message to his former teammate and maybe everyone that in his mind the 49ers don't want him. but they do want him. They just want him at their price. It is not a negotiation, to my knowledge, that has been completely dead. They just have not done a deal yet. And it's pretty clear that Brandon Ayuk wants the kind of money that Amon-Ra St. Brown ended up making, about $28 million average over the first 3 years of his deal.
That is Ian Rappaport from earlier in the offseason talking about the Brandon Ayuk. Is it overstating it to call it a situation? For my purposes, I want to call it a situation because that sounds like, oh, they're at odds. There's going to be a breaking point at some point, and he's going to get traded. It might not be a situation. It might just be a thing that they're where they are, he's where he is, and you know, ultimately they'll wait until he figures out that he should probably just come in and play on the fifth year option. But you know, wants the big money, wants it now. Connor Rogers tells us, like, of course, they what they would like to do is move through this. Now, what I liked hearing from Connor, which to me was new, is that they would likely look to pivot away from Deebo Samuel after this season and have then move forward with Ayuk and Pearsall. That also makes a lot of sense. It just really, the whole thing hinges on whether they can get Ayuk to, you know, come in. He's not holding out yet. He's, you know, there's nothing happening right now. There's no training camp doesn't start for another couple weeks. But we'll see. It certainly warrants our attention, I would say, the league's attention, what is going to happen there, how Ayuk handles it, what the 49ers decide to do. I think it would make sense to me if they wanted to move forward with Ayuk, certainly at their price, but good luck. They might not be able to, and things could boil over. So we'll see. They have already, you know, they drafted a replacement, whether it's a Deebo Samuel replacement or a Brandon Ayuk replacement remains to be seen, but they did draft a first-round receiver in Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. So, you know, they might feel like they could get by for another year. So I'm just hanging out here today. Mike is off and thinking about, you know, we've talked so much about this receiving core, and I feel like this week especially there has been more talk about the merits of getting by. I saw a clip from Amina Kimes. I don't know if it was a podcast or just a regular show that she does on ESPN talking about the by committee approach. Doug Farrar, I know, was on One Bills Live and wrote extensively about the merits of having by committee. You know, defense can't key on one guy, but you know what you need is for then, I mean, I just don't think it's realistic to expect that what I'm going to have six guys that all catch 40 passes or something. Like, is that the idea? Like, how far do you go with this committee idea? Because what usually happens, the reason number one receivers exist, like, they don't, well, in some cases, they show up ready-made. Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Malik Nabers all look like ready-made number one receivers. I think beyond guys like that, like the top guys in this year's draft, and there's other examples, I feel like guys get drafted and they emerge. They become the guy. They become the chemistry with the quarterback. They become a problem for defenses, and it just they emerge as number ones. So even with the idea of this idyllic kumbaya committee that's going to show up here for the Bills, it's still very likely that one of them emerges as the guy Allen trusts the most, that is the go-to guy. We had a caller in the first hour of the show today, and we'll get right back to calls here at 803-0550 in 1 second after I make this point. Caller said something about how Diggs, you know, Allen trying to force it to him, ignoring open guys. Like, the reason your quarterback focuses on that guy is because he trusts him, because he knows he has a reasonable amount of faith he'll be open and that he'll catch the ball if he puts it on him reasonably close. And like, so the idea that I'm better off because Allen won't be, and it was also in this sort of negative Diggs is a diva context, like, oh, he's got to get him the ball so, you know, he gets his numbers and he's satisfied and all that sort of stuff. Like, look, man, you force the ball to your best guy because he's your best guy. That's it. That, I think, is how it works. So I think even with the committee approach the Bills have, someone is likely to emerge as the guy that Allen trusts the most. The idea that he'll have four guys out running pass patterns, a tight end, a running back, a couple of receivers, and it's just going to be completely democratic, right? Like, no, they're all equals. I don't know. That's not how it usually works, I think. So I feel like that's a little bit of a fly in the ointment of the idea here too. 803-0550 again is the number if the 49ers want to trade Ayuk, and it costs a first and then a 4-year $120 million contract. I'm just ballparking. Maybe it doesn't have to cost a first. Maybe it's only a second. I don't know. But are you ready to sign back up for $30 million cap hit at receiver, or do you want to give this committee idea a spin? Matt is first up this segment. Hi, Matt. Thank you for calling. You are on the air here on WGR.
Hey, thanks, Bulldog. As soon as I heard that Steph Diggs was leaving the team, I instantly went to Brandon Ayuk and said, oh, well, this must be the answer. Bean must have this in his back pocket. So the fact that it hasn't even happened yet is concerning to me. And my instinct is to 100% go get him and have him and Josh, two dudes, in the absolute prime of their career, and do absolutely everything you can to win a Super Bowl. We waited 25-some-odd years to get the quarterback. We got him now. I think we'd be doing a huge disservice to not give Josh absolutely every single opportunity to thrive and succeed going forward. One small caveat with that is when Diggs was at his prime here is under a Brian Daboll offense. What we've seen from Joe Brady so far is very much more well-rounded with an effective James Cook. I would just want to make sure he would be able to utilize Ayuk that way. I'm sure he could, but that's my only reservation with that. What do you think?
Well, I get why you'd say that. I mean, we haven't really what we saw of Joe Brady, thank you for the call, as the Bills offensive coordinator, sort of coincided with Diggs' production is cratering too strong. It certainly decreased. And so is that because Joe Brady doesn't run an offense and isn't prepared to feature the number one receiver? Or is it because Diggs stopped warranting that sort of target share, right? Was he not getting as open as he used to? Was there a deterioration in his ability, in his performance, whether it was injury-based or just age-based? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think the Bills would probably like it to be that Diggs didn't warrant it anymore, because I'd have a very hard time assuming or even guessing at that Brady wouldn't know how to use a number one wide receiver. I mean, he had three of them at LSU, for God's sake. I mean, I know it's college, but I would trust that he would figure out a way to get the ball to the best guy. I don't think that's complicated. And I wouldn't take the way it went last year to me as a sign that it isn't going to, you know, that it couldn't happen, that he wouldn't know how to utilize this player. That sounds like you think he's borderline incompetent. And I definitely don't think that after, you know, whatever it was here, nine games or whatever it was he was at the helm of the offense for. So I wouldn't really worry about that. I'm with you. Like, I'm heaven and earth, whatever, you know. I thought back when the trade was made, when Diggs first went to Houston, like, oh, of course. I think I probably even sounded, if I could go back and access it, I'll bet I sound like I assumed it would happen. That's how sure I was. Like, oh, absolutely. They're not gonna leave this receiver core in the hands of Curtis Samuel and a rookie and Shakir, and then, you know, now more lately it's Valdez Scantling and Chase Claypool. Like, what are we doing here? But, you know, here we are. We're months down the road, and that looks like what they're prepared to do, you know, unless they, you know, find their way to a deal, really. And that's what we're talking about. If the 49ers were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, auction them, they're calling teams. Do you want the Bills to take that call and act on it? As curious as I am about this by committee idea, and as much as I like Khalil Shakir, I would make the deal. I would give up next year's first, and I would sign the big contract and get right back in the $30 million a year receiver boat that I just got out of, because I think the offense would be better. And what am I trying to do here? Because this feels like a great experiment to an extent with Allen in the prime of his career. And I'm a lot uncomfortable with that. That really worries me. 803-0550 is the number. You want in, we'd love to have you. Matt Perino from the Shout. What the hell? Why can't I say the dude's name and where he works today? We've had him on 20 times. I've never had this problem before today. What is happening? Matt Perino from the Shout podcast. Matt, if you're out there listening, I mean, I'm sorry, man. I'll be better by the time you come on in 15 minutes. Anyway, that's coming up. Still time for your calls before that and after that, of course, at 803-0550. Mike Shope is off today, along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Thanks for hanging with us today. Mike Shope has the day off. I am the Bulldog. Zach Jones alongside as well. 803-0550 is the number. Mike is first up this segment. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
One today. I haven't heard if you guys spoke about it yet, but I've been with you since they traded Diggs.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, I'm real sorry. We're having a very spotty connection with you. If you want to try back after we talk to Matt Perino, that might be worth a shot, because your phone was just kind of cutting in and out on us, and that will enable us to actually get out on time for once. Zach is doing a touchdown dance in there. There might be articles of clothing flying off in there. He's so excited. All right, time out. Matt Perino, the Shout podcast. Hey! Right? I had to concentrate so hard just now to do that. It's humiliating. I didn't need to tell you that, but, you know, whatever. Open book. We'll take a time out here, get Matt up, and get his thoughts on what we've been talking about here all day, and lots of other ideas and things to kick around with Matt about the Bills and training camp coming up and the coming season and all of it. So stay tuned. I'm the Bulldog. You're listening to WGR.
At his prime here is under a Brian Daboll offense. What we've seen from Joe Brady so far is very much more well-rounded with an effective James Cook. I would just want to make sure he would be able to utilize Ayuk that way. I'm sure he could, but that's my only reservation with that. What do you think?
Well, I get why you'd say that. I mean, we haven't really what we saw of Joe Brady. Thank you for the call. As the Bills' offensive coordinator, sort of coincided with Diggs' production as cratering too strong. It certainly decreased, and so is that because Joe Brady doesn't run an offense and isn't prepared to feature the number one receiver, or is it because Diggs stopped warranting that sort of target share, right? Did was he not getting as open as he used to? Was there a deterioration in his ability, in his performance, whether it was injury-based or just age-based? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I think the Bills would probably like it to be that Diggs didn't warrant it anymore, because I'd have a very hard time assuming or even guessing at that Brady wouldn't know how to use a number one wide receiver. I mean, he had three of them at LSU, for God's sake. I mean, I know it's college, but I would trust that he would figure out a way to get the ball to the best guy. I don't think that's complicated. And I wouldn't take the way it went last year to me as a sign that it isn't going to, you know, it, that it couldn't happen, that he wouldn't know how to utilize this player. That just, that sounds like you think he's borderline incompetent. And I definitely don't think that after, you know, whatever it was here, nine games or whatever it was he was at the helm of the offense for. So I wouldn't really worry about that. I'm with you. Like, I'm heaven and earth, whatever, you know, I thought, back when the trade was made, when Diggs first went to Houston, like, oh, of course. I think I probably even sounded, if I could go back and access it, I'll bet I sound like I assumed it would happen. That's how sure I was. Like, oh, absolutely. They're not gonna leave this receiver core in the hands of Curtis Samuel and a rookie and Shakir, and then, you know, now more lately it's Valdez Scantling and Chase Claypool. Like, what are we doing here? But, you know, here we are. We're months down the road, and that looks like what they're prepared to do, you know, unless they, you know, find their way to a deal, really. And that's what we're talking about. If the 49ers were going to trade Brandon Ayuk, auction them, they're calling teams. Do you want the Bills to take that call and act on it? As curious as I am about this by committee idea, and as much as I like Khalil Shakir, I would make the deal. I would give up next year's first, and I would sign the big contract and get right back in the $30 million a year receiver boat that I just got out of, because I think the offense would be better. And what am I trying to do here? Because this feels like a great experiment to an extent with Allen in the prime of his career. And I'm a lot uncomfortable with that. That really worries me. 803-0550 is the number. You want in, we'd love to have you. Matt Perino from the Shout. What the hell? Why can't I say the dude's name and where he works today? We've had him on 20 times. I've never had this problem before today. What is happening? Matt Perino from the Shout podcast. Matt, if you're out there listening, I mean, I'm sorry, man. I'll be better by the time you come on in 15 minutes. Anyway, that's coming up. Still time for your calls before that and after that, of course, at 803-0550. Mike Shope is off today, along with Zach Jones. I'm the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR. Thanks for hanging with us today. Mike Shope has the day off. I am the Bulldog. Zach Jones alongside as well. 803-0550 is the number. Mike is first up this segment. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
One today. I haven't heard if you guys spoke about it yet, but I've been with you since they traded Diggs.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, I'm real sorry. We're having a very spotty connection with you. If you want to try back after we talk to Matt Perino, that might be worth a shot, because your phone was just kind of cutting in and out on us, and that will enable us to actually get out on time for once. Zach is doing a touchdown dance in there. There might be articles of clothing flying off in there. He's so excited. All right, time out. Matt Perino, the Shout podcast. Hey! Right? I had to concentrate so hard just now to do that. It's humiliating. I didn't need to tell you that, but, you know, whatever. Open book. We'll take a time out here, get Matt up, and get his thoughts on what we've been talking about here all day, and lots of other ideas and things to kick around with Matt about the Bills and training camp coming up and the coming season and all of it. So stay tuned. I'm the Bulldog. You're listening to WGR.